Yeah.
Peter brushes past me and starts taking off his sneakers. You guys are a no-shoes house, right? Yeah, I say, surprised. Is your mom making something too? Rice Krispie treats. Another way smarter choice than 72 cupcakes. Sorry you came over here for nothing. Maybe we can go to the game next Friday, I say, expecting him to put his shoes back on. But he doesn't. He wanders into the kitchen and sits on a stool. Huh? Your house looks the same as I remembered, he says, looking around. He points at the framed picture of me and Margot taking a bath when we were babies.
Cute.
I can feel my cheeks burn. I go and turn the photo over. When have you ever been to my house?
Back in seventh grade. Remember how we'd hang out in your neighbor's treehouse? I had to pee once, and you let me use your bathroom.
Oh, yeah, I say. It's funny to see a boy other than Josh in our kitchen. I feel nervous for some reason.
How long is it going to take?
He asks me, his hands in his pockets. Hours, probably. I pick up the measuring cup again. I can't remember what cup I was on. Peter groans.
Why can't we just go to the store and buy some?
I start measuring the flour that's in the bowl, separating it into piles.
Because, do you think any of the other moms are buying cupcakes from Food Lion? How would that make Kitty look?
Well, if it's for Kitty, then Kitty should be helping.
Peter hops off the stool and comes up to me and slides his hands around my waist and tries to untie my apron strings.
Where is the kid?
I stare at him. What are you doing? Peter looks at me like I'm a dummy.
I need an apron too if I'm going to help. I'm not trying to get my clothes all messed up.
We're not going to be done in time for the game, I tell him.
Then we'll just go to the party after.
Peter shoots me an incredulous look.
That was in the note I wrote you today. God, why do I even bother?
I was really busy today, I say meekly. I feel bad. He's following through on his end of the deal and faithfully writing me a note a day, and I can't even be bothered to read them. I don't know if I can go to the party. I don't know if I'm allowed to go out that late.
Is your dad home? I'll ask him.
No, he's at the hospital. Besides, I can't just leave Kitty here by herself. I pick up the measuring cup again.
Well, what time does he get home?
I don't know, maybe late. Or maybe like in the next hour, but Peter will be long gone by then.
You should just go. I don't want to hold you up.
Peter groans.
Covey, I need you. Jen hasn't said a word about us yet, which is kind of the whole point of this. And she might bring that dickhole she's dating.
Peter pushes out his lower lip.
Come on.
I came through for you with Josh, didn't I?
Yes, I admit. But Peter, I have to make these cupcakes for the bake sale.
Peter stretches his arms out. Then I'll help you. Just give me an apron.
I back away from him and start rummaging around for another apron. I find one with a cupcake print and hand it to him. He makes a face and points at mine.
I want the one you're wearing.
But it's mine. It's red and white gingham with little brown bears. My grandma got it for me in Korea. I always bake in this. Just wear that one. Slowly, Peter shakes his head and holds out his hand.
Give me yours. You owe me for not reading any of my notes.
I untie the apron and hand it over. I turn around and go back to my measuring.
You're a bigger baby than Kitty.
Just hurry up and give me a task.
Are you qualified, though? Because I only have exactly enough ingredients for 6 dozen cupcakes. I don't want to have to start over.
I know how to bake.
Okay, then. Dump those sticks of butter into the mixing bowl.
And then?
And then, when you're done, I'll give you your next task. Peter rolls his eyes, but he does as he's told.
So, this is what you do on Friday nights? Stay home and bake in your PJs?
I do other stuff, too, I say, tying my hair into a tighter ponytail.
Like?
I'm still so flustered from Peter's sudden appearance that I can't think.
I go out. Where?
God, I don't know. Quit interrogating me, Peter. I blow my bangs out of my eyes. It's getting really warm in here. I might as well just turn off the oven because Peter's arrival has slowed down this whole process. At this rate, I'll be up all night. You made me lose my count on the flour. I'm going to have to start over from scratch.
Here, let me do it,
Peter says, coming up close behind me. I jerk away from him. No, I'll do it, I say, and he shakes his head and tries to take the measuring cup from me, but I won't let go, and flour poofs out of the cup and into the air. It dusts us both. Peter starts cracking up, and I let out an outraged shriek. Peter! He's laughing too hard to speak. I cross my arms. I'd better still have enough flour.
You look like a grandma, he says, still laughing.
Well, you look like a grandpa, I counter. I dump the flour in my mixing bowl back into the flour canister.
Actually, you're really a lot like my granny, Peter says. You hate cussing. You like to bake. You stay at home on Friday nights.
Wow, I'm dating my granny. Gross. I start measuring again. 1, 2. I don't stay home every Friday night. 3.
I've never seen you out. You don't go to parties.
We used to hang out back in the day. Why'd you stop hanging out? 4. I don't know. Middle school was different. What does he want me to say? That Genevieve decided I wasn't cool enough, so I got left behind? Why is he so clueless?
I always wondered why you stopped hanging out with us.
Was I on 5 or 6? Peter, you made me lose my count again.
I have that effect on women.
I roll my eyes at him, and he grins back at me. But before he can say anything else, I yell, Kitty, get down here. I'm working. Peter's here. I know that will get her. In 5 seconds flat, Kitty's running into the kitchen. She skids to a stop, all of a sudden shy. Why are you here? She asks him.
To pick up Lara Jean. Why aren't you helping?
I was running an experiment. Want to help me? I answer for him. Sure, he'll help you. To Peter, I say, You're distracting me. Go help Kitty.
I don't know if you want my help, Catherine. See, I'm really distracting to women. I make them lose their count.
Peter winks at her, and I make a gagging sound.
Why don't you stay down here and help us bake?
Boring! Kitty turns tail and runs back up the stairs. Don't you dare try to sprinkle her frost when it's all over, I yell. You haven't earned the right. I'm creaming the butter and Peter's cracking eggs into a chipped salad bowl when my dad gets home.
Whose car is that out front?
Daddy asks as he walks into the kitchen. He stops short.
Hello,
he says, surprised. He has a Chan's Chinese bistro bag in his hands. Hey, Daddy, I say, like it's perfectly normal that Peter Kavinsky is cooking in our kitchen. You look tired. Peter stands up straighter.
Hi, Dr. Covey.
My dad sets the bag down on the kitchen table.
Oh, hello, he says, clearing his throat. Nice to see you. You're Peter K., right?
Right.
One of the old gang,
my dad says jovially, and I cringe.
What are you kids up to tonight?
I'm baking cupcakes for Kitty's PTA bake sale, and Peter's helping, I say. My dad nods.
Are you hungry, Peter? I have plenty.
He lifts the bag.
Shrimp lo mein, kung pao chicken.
Actually, Lara Jean and I were going to stop by our friend's party, Peter says,
if that would be okay. I'll bring her back early.
Before my dad can answer, I say to Peter, I told you I have to finish these cupcakes.
Kitty and I will finish them, my dad interjects. You two go to that birthday party.
My stomach flips. It's really okay, Daddy. I have to be the one to do them. I'm decorating them specially.
Kitty and I will figure it out. You can go get changed. We'll keep working on these cupcakes.
I open and close my mouth like a trout. All right, then. And I don't make a move. I just stand there, because I'm afraid to leave the two of them alone together. Peter smiles at me broadly.
You heard the man. We've got this covered.
I think, don't act too confident because then my dad will think you're arrogant. There are certain outfits you have that make you feel good every time you wear them. And then there are outfits where you wore them too many times in a row because you liked them so much, and now they just feel like garbage. I'm looking at my closet now, and everything looks like garbage. My anxiety is only compounded by the fact that I know Jen will be wearing the exact right thing because she always wears the exact right thing. And I have to be wearing the right thing, too. Peter wouldn't have come by and made such a point of going to this party if it weren't important to him. I pull on my jeans and try on different tops. A frilly peach one that suddenly looks too prissy in my eyes. A long fuzzy sweater with a penguin on it that looks too kiddish. I'm stepping into a pair of gray shorts with black suspenders when someone knocks at my door. I freeze and grab a sweater to cover myself up. Lara Jean? It's Peter. Yes?
Are you almost ready?
Almost. Just go downstairs. I'll be down soon. He lets out an audible sigh.
Okay. I'm gonna see what the kid's doing.
When I hear his footsteps walking away, I scramble and try a cream polka dot blouse with the short suspenders ensemble. It's cute, but is it too cute? Too much? And should I do black tights or black knee socks? Margot said I look Parisian in this outfit. Parisian is a good thing. It's sophisticated, romantic. I try on a beret just to see the effect, and I immediately throw it off. Definitely too much. I wish Peter hadn't snuck up on me with this. I need time to plan, to prepare. Though, truthfully, if he'd asked me ahead of time, I would have come up with an excuse not to go. It's one thing to go to Tart and Tangy after school, but a party with all of Peter's friends, not to mention Genevieve. I hop around my room, searching for my over-the-knee socks, then searching for my strawberry lip pot that looks like a strawberry. Gosh, I really need to clean my room. It's hard to find anything in this mess. I run to Margot's room for her big grandpa cardigan, and I pass Kitty's open door, where I see Peter and Kitty lying on the floor working with her lab set. I root through Margot's sweater drawer, which is now t-shirts and shorts, because she's taken most of her sweaters. No grandpa cardigan. But at the bottom of the drawer, there is an envelope, a letter, from Josh. I want to open it so badly. I know I shouldn't. Carefully, ever so carefully, I take out the letter and unfold it. Dear Margot, you say we had to break up because you don't want to go to college with a boyfriend, and you want your freedom and you don't want to be held back. But you know, and I know, that's not the real reason. You broke up with me because we had sex and you were scared of getting close to me. I stop reading. I can't believe it. Chris was right and I was wrong. Margot and Josh did have sex. It's like everything I thought I knew is the opposite. I thought I knew exactly who my sister was, but it turns out I don't know anything. I hear Peter calling my name.
Lara Jean, are you ready yet?
Hastily, I fold the letter up and put it back in the envelope. I put it back in the drawer and slam the drawer shut.
Coming!
Chapter 38. We're standing at the front door of Steve Bledel's mansion. Steve's on the football team. He's mostly known for having a rich stepdad with his own plane.
Ready?
Peter asks me. I wipe my palms on my shorts. I wish I'd had time to do something better to my hair. Not really.
Then let's talk strategy for a second. All you have to do is act like you're in love with me. That shouldn't be too hard.
I roll my eyes. You're the vainest boy I've ever met. Peter grins and shrugs. He's got his hand on the doorknob, but then he stops.
Hold on, he says,
and he pulls the hair tie out of my hair and tosses it into the yard.
Hey! It looks better down. Just trust me.
Peter runs his fingers through my hair and fluffs it up, and I swat his hand away. Then he takes his phone out of his back pocket and he snaps a picture of me. I give him a puzzled look, and he explains,
in case Jen checks my phone. I watch as he sets the picture as his wallpaper.
Can we do another one? I don't like the way my hair looks.
Nah, I like it. You look pretty.
He probably only said it so we could hurry up and go inside, but it makes me feel good. Walking into this party with Peter Kavinsky, I can't help but feel a sudden rush of pride. He's here with me. Or is it that I'm here with him? I see her as soon as we walk in. She's on the couch with her girls. They're all drinking from red solo cups. No boyfriend in sight. She raises her eyebrows at me and whispers something to Emily Nussbaum.
Hey, Lara Jean, Emily calls out, crooking her finger at me. Come sit by us.
I start to walk toward them, thinking Peter is next to me, but he's not. He stopped to say hi to someone. I look at him with panicky eyes, and he just gestures at me to keep going. He mouths, "You're up." Crossing the room alone feels like crossing a continent, with Jen and her friends watching me.
Hi, guys,
I say, and my voice comes out high-pitched and little girlish. There's no room for me on the couch, so I perch on an armrest like a bird on a telephone wire. I keep my eyes trained on Peter's back. He's across the room with some guys from the lacrosse team. It must be nice to be him, so at ease, so comfortable with himself, knowing that people are waiting for him, like, Peter's here, now the party can really get started. I look around the room just to have something to do and see Gabe and Darrell, and they wave at me very nicely but don't come over. It feels like everyone is waiting and watching. Waiting and watching to see what Genevieve will do. I wish I hadn't come. Emily leans forward.
We're all dying to know. What's the story with you and Kavinsky?
I know she's been commissioned by Jen to ask. Jen's sipping her drink, casual as can be, but she's waiting for my answer. Is she drunk yet? I wonder. From everything I've heard and know about Jen, she's a mean drunk. Not that I've ever personally experienced it, but I've heard things. There are stories. I wet my lips.
Whatever Peter said, I guess that's the story.
Emily waves this off like whatever Peter says doesn't really count.
We want to hear it from you. I mean, it's just so surprising. How did this even happen?
She leans closer like we are girlfriends. When I hesitate, when my eyes dart toward Genevieve, she smiles and rolls her eyes.
It's okay. You can say, Lara Jean. Peter and I are over. I don't know if he told you this, but I'm actually the one who broke up with him, so.
I nod. That's what he said. That is not what he said, but it's what I already knew.
So, when did you guys get together?
She tries to sound offhand, but I know my answer is important to her. She's trying to catch me in something.
Pretty recently, I say.
How recently?
She presses.
I swallow.
Right before school started?
I tell her. Isn't that what Peter and I decided the story was going to be? Genevieve's eyes go bright and my heart sinks. I've said the wrong thing, but it's too late. It's hard not to get caught up in her spell. She's the kind of person you want to like you. You know she can be cruel. You've seen her be cruel. But when her eyes are on you and she's paying attention to you, you want it to last. Her beauty is part of it, but there's something more, something that draws you in. I think it's her transparency. Everything she thinks or feels is written all over her face, and even if it wasn't, she'd say it anyway because she says what she thinks without thinking first. I can see why Peter has loved her for so long.
I think it's adorable, Genevieve says, and then the girls start talking about some concert they're trying to get tickets for, and I just sit there, glad I don't have to talk anymore, wondering how it's going with the cupcakes back at home. I hope Daddy isn't over-baking them. There's nothing worse than a dry cupcake. The girls move on to talking about Halloween costumes, so I get up and go to the bathroom. I come back to find Peter sitting in a wingback leather armchair, drinking a beer and talking to Gabe. There's nowhere for me to sit. My spot on the couch has been taken. Now what? I stand there for a second, and then I go for it. I do what a girl in love with Peter would do. I do what Genevieve would do. I march right up and plop down in his lap like it's my rightful place. Peter yelps in surprise.
Hey,
he says, coughing on his beer. Hey, I say. Then I tweak him once on the nose like I saw a girl do in a black and white movie. Peter shifts in his seat and gives me a look like he's trying not to laugh, and I get nervous. Tweaking a boy on the nose is romantic, right? Then, out of the corner of my eye, I see Genevieve glaring at us. She whispers something to Emily and stalks out of the room. Success. Later, I'm pouring myself cherry Coke, and I see Genevieve and Peter talking in the kitchen. She's speaking to him in a low, urgent voice, and she reaches out and touches his arm. He tries to brush her hand away, but she doesn't let go. I'm so mesmerized, I don't even notice when Lucas Kraft comes up to me, popping the cap off a bottle of Bud Light. Hey, Lara Jean. Hi. I'm relieved to see a familiar face. He stands next to me, our backs against the dining room wall. What are they fighting about? Who even knows? I say. I smile a secret smile. Hopefully it's about me, and Peter will be happy our plan is finally working. Lucas crooks his finger at me so I'll come closer. He whispers, Fighting isn't a good sign, Lara Jean. It means you still care. His breath smells like beer. Genevieve obviously still cares. Peter must too. Lucas pats me on the head fondly. Just be careful. Thank you, I say. Peter stalks out of the kitchen and says, Are you ready to go? He doesn't wait for me to answer him. He just starts walking, his shoulders stiff. I give Lucas a shrug. See you Monday, Lucas. Then I scurry after Peter. He's still mad. I can tell by the way he jerks the keys into the ignition. God, she makes me crazy. He's so keyed up, energy is vibrating off him in waves. What did you say to her? I shift uncomfortably in my seat. She asked me when we got together. I told her just before school started. Peter does a full-body groan. We hooked up that first weekend. But you guys were broken up already. Yeah, well... Peter shrugs. Whatever. What's done is done. Relieved, I click on my seatbelt and kick my shoes off. What were you two fighting about tonight, anyway? Don't worry about it. You did a good job, by the way. She's so jealous it's killing her. Yay, I say, just as long as she doesn't kill me. We drive through the night in silence. Then I ask, Peter, how did you know you loved Genevieve? God, Lara Jean, why do you have to ask those kind of questions? Because I'm a naturally curious person. I flip down his mirror and start braiding the top of my hair. And maybe the question you should be asking yourself is, why are you so afraid to answer those kinds of questions? I'm not afraid. Then why won't you answer the question? Peter goes silent, and I'm pretty sure he's not going to answer, but then, after a long pause where my question just hangs in the air, he says, I don't know if I ever loved Genevieve. How would I even know what that felt like? I'm 17, for God's sake. 17's not so young. 100 years ago, people got married when they were practically our age. Yeah, that was before electricity and the internet. 100 years ago, 18-year-old guys were out there fighting wars with bayonets and holding a man's life in their hands. They lived a lot of life by the time they were our age. What do kids our age know about love and life? I've never heard him talk like this before. Like he actually cares about something. I think he's still all worked up from his fight with Genevieve. I wind my hair into a honey bun and secure it with a ponytail holder. You know who you sound like? You sound like my grandpa, I say. Also, I think you're stalling because you don't want to answer the question. I answered it. You just didn't like my answer. We pull up in front of my house. Peter turns off the engine, which is what he does when he wants to talk a little while longer. So I don't jump out right away.
I put my bag in my lap and search for my keys, even though the lights are on upstairs. Gosh, to be sitting in the passenger seat of Peter Kavinsky's black Audi. Isn't that what every girl has ever wanted in the history of boys and girls? Not Peter Kavinsky specifically, or yes, maybe Peter Kavinsky specifically. Peter leans his head back against the headrest and closes his eyes. Did you know that when people fight with each other, that means they still really care about each other? When Peter doesn't answer, I say, Genevieve must really have a hold on you. I expect him to deny it, but he doesn't. Instead, he says, She does, but I wish she didn't. I don't want to be owned by anyone or belong to anyone. Margot would say she belongs to herself. Kitty would say she belongs to no one. And I guess I would say I belong to my sisters and my dad. But that won't always be true. To belong to someone, I didn't know it, but now that I think about it, it seems like that's all I've ever wanted. To really be somebody's, and to have them be mine. So that's why you're doing this? I tell him I'm partly asking, but I'm mostly telling. To prove you don't belong to her, or with her. I stop. Do you think there's a difference? Between belonging with and belonging to, I mean.
Sure. One implies choice, the other doesn't.
You must really love her to go to all this trouble. Peter makes a dismissive sound.
You're too dreamy-eyed.
Thank you, I say, even though I know he doesn't mean it as a compliment. I say it just to bug him. I know I've succeeded when he says, his face sour. What would you know about love, Lara Jean? You've never even had a boyfriend before. I'm tempted to make up someone, a boy from camp, from another town, from anywhere. His name is Clint, is on the tip of my tongue. But it would be too humiliating because he'd know I was lying. I already told him I never dated anybody before. And even if I hadn't, it is far more pathetic to make up a boyfriend than to just admit the truth. No, I've never had a boyfriend. But plenty of people I know have had boyfriends, but they've never once been in love. I've been in love. That's why I'm doing this. Peter snorts.
With who? Josh Sanderson? That tool?
He's not a tool, I say, frowning at him. You don't even know him to say that.
Anybody with one eye and half a brain could tell what a tool that guy is.
Are you saying my sister's blind and brainless? I demand. If he says one bad word about my sister, that's it. This whole thing is off. I don't need him that badly. Peter laughs.
No, I'm saying you are.
You know what? I've changed my mind. You've obviously never loved anyone but yourself. I try to jerk the passenger door open, but it's locked.
Lara Jean, I was just kidding. Come on.
See you Monday.
Wait. First, tell me something.
Peter leans back in his seat.
How come you've never dated anybody?
I shrug. I don't know. Because nobody ever asked.
Bullshit. I know for a fact that Martinez asked you to homecoming, and you said no.
I'm surprised he knows about that. What is it with you guys all calling each other by your last name? I ask him. I struggle to find the right word. Affected? Affected?
Don't change the subject.
I guess I said no because I was scared. I stare out the window and run my finger along the glass, making an M for Martinez.
Of Tommy?
No, I like Tommy. It's not that. It's scary when it's real. When it's not just thinking about a person, but like having a real, live person in front of you with, like, expectations, and wants. I finally look at Peter, and I'm surprised by how hard he's paying attention. His eyes are intent and focused on me like he's actually interested in what I'm saying. Even when I liked a boy so much, loved him even, I would always rather be with my sisters because that's where I belong.
Wait, what about right now?
Right now? Well, I don't like you that way, so.
Good, Peter says. Don't go falling for me again, okay? I can't have any more girls in love with me. It's exhausting.
I laugh out loud. You're so full of yourself.
I'm kidding, he protests. But he's not. What did you ever see in me anyway?
He grins at me then, cocky again and so sure of his charm. Honestly, I really couldn't tell you. The grin falters and then rights itself, but now it's not so certain.
You said it was because I make people feel special. You said it was because I was a good dancer, and I was science partners with Jeffrey Suttleman.
Wow, you really memorized every single word of that letter, huh? I tease. It gives me a small, mean surge of satisfaction to see Peter's grin fade completely. That surge is immediately followed by remorse because now I've hurt his feelings for no good reason. What is it in me that wants to hurt Peter Kavinsky's feelings? To make it better, I quickly add, No, it's true. You really did have something about you then. I guess I made it worse because he flinches. I don't know what else to say, so I open the car door and climb out. Thanks for the ride, Peter. When I get inside the house, I go look in the kitchen, first to check on the cupcakes. They're packed away in Tupperware in my cupcake carrier. The frosting's a little messy, and the sprinkles are haphazard, but overall they look pretty good. That's a relief. Kitty won't be shamed at the PTA bake sale on my account, at least. From Margot Covey, mcovey@standrews.ac.uk, to Laura Jean Covey, laurajeansong@gmail.com. How's school going so far? Have you joined any new clubs? I think you should consider Lit Mag or Model UN. Also, don't forget it's Korean Thanksgiving this week, and you have to call Grandma or she'll be mad. Miss you guys. P.S. Please send Oreos. I miss our dunk contests. Love, M. From Laura Jean Covey, laurajeansong@gmail.com, to Margot Covey, mcovey@standrews.ac.uk. School is good. No new clubs yet, but we'll see. I already have it down in my planner to call Grandma. Don't worry about a thing. I've got everything under control here. XX. Chapter 39. Peter's mom owns an antique store called Linden and White in the cobblestony part of downtown. She sells furniture mostly, but she has jewelry cases too, arranged by decades. My favorite decade is the aughts, which means the 1900s. There's this one gold heart locket with a tiny diamond chip in the center. It looks like a starburst. It costs $400. The store is right next to McCall's bookstore, so I go in sometimes and visit with it. I always expect it to be gone, but then it never is. We once bought our mom a gold clover pin from the 1940s for Mother's Day. Margot and I ran a lemonade stand every Saturday for a month, and we were able to chip in $16 for it. I remember how proud we were when we presented Daddy with the money. We had it nice and neat in a Ziploc bag. At the time, I thought we were paying the lion's share, and my dad was only helping out a little. I realize now that the pin cost a lot more than $16. I should ask Daddy how much it really cost. But then, maybe I don't want to know. Maybe it's nicer not knowing. We buried her with it because it was her favorite. I'm standing over the case, touching my fingers to the glass, when Peter comes out from around back.
Hey,
he says, surprised. Hey, I say. What are you doing here? Peter gives me a look like I'm a dummy.
My mom owns the place, remember?
Well, duh, I've just never seen you here before, I say. Do you work here?
Nah, I had to drop something off for my mom. Now she's saying I have to go pick up a set of chairs in Huntsburg tomorrow, Peter says in a grumbly voice. It's 2 hours there and back. Annoying.
I nod companionably and lean away from the case. I pretend to look at a pink and black globe. Actually, Margot would like this. It could be a nice Christmas present for her. I give it a little spin. How much is this globe?
Whatever it says on the sticker.
Peter rests his elbows on the case and leans forward.
You should come.
I look up at him. Come where?
To pick up the chairs with me.
You just complained about how annoying it's going to be.
Yeah, alone. If you go, it might be slightly less annoying.
Gee, thanks.
You're welcome.
I roll my eyes. Peter says you're welcome to everything. It's like, no, Peter, that was not a genuine thank you, so you do not need to say you're welcome.
So are you coming or what?
Or what?
Come on! I'm picking up the chairs from an estate sale. The owner was some kind of shut-in. Stuff has just been sitting there for like 50 years. I bet there'll be some stuff you can look at. You like old stuff, right?
Yes, I say, surprised that he knows this about me. Actually, I've kind of always wanted to go to an estate sale. How did the owner die? Like, how long was it before someone found him?
God, you're morbid, he shudders. Didn't know you had that side to you.
I have lots of sides to me, I tell him. I lean forward. So, how did he die?
He isn't dead, you weirdo. He's just old. His family's sending him to a nursing home.
Peter raises an eyebrow at me.
So, I'll pick you up tomorrow at 7.
7? You never said anything about leaving at 7 in the morning on a Saturday.
Sorry, he says contritely. We have to go early before all the good stuff gets snatched up.
That night, I pack lunches for Peter and me. I make roast beef sandwiches with cheese and tomato, mayonnaise for me, mustard for Peter. Peter doesn't like mayonnaise. It's funny the things you pick up in a fake relationship. Kitty zooms into the kitchen and tries to grab a sandwich half. I smack her hand away. That's not for you.
Then who's it for?
It's for my lunch tomorrow, mine and Peter's. She climbs onto a stool and watches me wrap the sandwiches in wax paper. Sandwiches look so much prettier wrapped in wax paper than encased in Ziploc. Any chance I get, I use wax paper.
I like Peter, Kitty says. He's a lot different than Josh, but I like him.
I look up. What do you mean?
I don't know. He's really funny. He jokes around a lot.
You must really be in love if you're making sandwiches for him. When Margot and Josh first became a couple, she made 3-cheese macaroni and cheese all the time because that's his favorite.
What's Peter's favorite?
I don't know. I mean, he likes everything. Kitty gives me the side eye.
If you're his girlfriend, you should know what his favorite food is.
I know he doesn't like mayonnaise, I offer.
That's because mayonnaise is gross. Josh hates mayonnaise, too.
I feel a pang. Josh does hate mayonnaise. Kitty, do you miss Josh?
She nods. I wish he still came over.
A wistful look crosses over her face, and I'm about to give her a hug when she puts her hands on her hips.
Just don't use all the roast beef, because I need it for my lunch next week.
If we run out, I'll make tuna salad. Sheesh.
See that you do,
Kitty says, and zooms off again.
See that you do? Where does she get this stuff?
At 7:30, I'm sitting by the window waiting for Peter to pull up. I've got a brown paper bag with our sandwiches and my camera, in case there's anything spooky or cool I can take a picture of. I'm picturing a crumbling gray old mansion like you see in horror movies, with a gate and a murky pond or a maze in the backyard. Peter's mom's minivan pulls up at 7:45, which is annoying. I could have slept a whole hour longer. I run out to the car and hop inside, and before I can say a word, he says,
I'm sorry, but look what I brought you.
He passes me a donut in a napkin, still warm.
I stopped and got it special. Right when they opened at 7:30, it's mocha sugar.
I break off a piece and pop it into my mouth.
Yum!
He gives me a sidelong glance as he pulls out of my driveway.
So, I did the right thing being late, right?
I nod, taking a big bite.
You did the exact right thing, I say, my mouth full.
Hey, do you have any water? Peter hands me a half-full water bottle and I gulp it down.
This is the best donut I ever had, I tell him.
Good, he says.
Then he takes one look at me and laughs.
You have sugar all over your face.
I wipe my mouth off with the other side of the napkin.
Cheeks, too, he says.
All right, all right.
Then it's quiet, which makes me nervous.
Can I put some music on?
I start pulling out my phone.
Actually, do you mind if we just drive in quiet for a while? I can't have music blaring in my face before my caffeine kicks in.
Sure.
I'm not sure if that means he wants me to be quiet, too. I wouldn't have agreed to come on this little outing if I'd known I would have to be silent. Peter has a serene look on his face, like he's a fishing boat captain and we are floating placidly along in the middle of the sea. Except he isn't driving slowly. He's driving really fast. I stay quiet for all of 10 seconds and then say, "Wait, were you wanting me to be quiet too?"
"No, I just didn't want music. You can talk as much as you want."
"Okay." And then I'm quiet because it's awkward when someone tells you you can talk as much as you want. "Hey, so what's your favorite food?"
"I like everything."
"But what's your favorite? Like your favorite favorite? Is it macaroni and cheese or fried chicken or steak or pizza?"
"I like all that stuff equally."
I let out an aggrieved sigh. Why does Peter not get the concept of picking a favorite thing? Peter mimics my sigh and laughs.
"Fine. I like cinnamon toast. That's my favorite thing."
"Cinnamon toast?" I repeat. "You like cinnamon toast better than crab legs? Better than a cheeseburger?"
"Yes."
"Better than barbecue?" Peter hesitates. Then he says, "Yes. Now quit picking my choice apart. I stand by my choice." I shrug. "Okay." I wait, give him a chance to ask me what my favorite food is, but he doesn't. So I say, "My favorite food is cake."
"What kind of cake?"
"It doesn't matter. All cake."
"You just gave me so much shit for not picking," he begins.
"But it's so hard to pick one kind," I burst out. "I mean, there's coconut cake, the kind with white frosting that looks like a snowball. I like that a lot. But then I also like cheesecake and lemon cake and carrot cake. Oh, also red velvet cake with cream cheese frosting and chocolate cake with chocolate ganache frosting." I pause. "Have you ever had olive oil cake?"
"No, that sounds weird."
"It's really, really good. Really moist and delicious. I'll make it for you." Peter groans.
"You're making me hungry. I should have gotten a whole bag of those donuts."
I open up my brown paper bag and pull out his sandwich. I wrote a P on his in Sharpie so I'd know whose was whose. "Do you want a sandwich?"
"You made that for me?"
"I mean, I was making one for myself, too. It would have been rude to just bring one sandwich and eat it in front of you." Peter accepts the sandwich and eats it with the bottom half still wrapped.
"This is good," he says, nodding. "What kind of mustard is this?"
Pleased, I say, "It's beer mustard. My dad orders it from some fancy food catalog. My dad's really into cooking."
"Aren't you going to eat yours, too?"
"I'm saving it for later," I say. Halfway into the ride, Peter starts weaving in and out of traffic, and he keeps looking at the clock on the dashboard. "Why are we in such a hurry?" I ask him.
"The Epsteins," he says, rapping his fingers on the steering wheel.
"Who are the Epsteins?"
"They're an old married couple with an antique store in Charlottesville. Last time, Phil got there 5 minutes before me and cleared the whole place out. That's not going to happen today."
Impressed, I say, "Wow, I had no idea this business was so cutthroat." Like a know-it-all, Peter smirks and goes,
"Isn't all business?"
I roll my eyes at the window. Peter's so Peter. We're at a stoplight when Peter suddenly sits up straight and says, "Oh shit, the Epsteins!" I was halfway asleep. My eyes fly open and I yell, "Where? Where?" "Red SUV, 2 cars ahead on the right." I crane my neck to look. They are a gray-haired couple, maybe in their 60s or 70s. It's hard to tell from this far away. As soon as the light turns green, Peter guns it and drives up on the shoulder. I scream out, "Go, go, go!" And then we're flying past the Epsteins. My heart is racing out of control. I can't help but lean my head out the window and scream because it's such a thrill. My hair whips in the wind, and I know it's going to be a tangled mess, but I couldn't care less. "Yeah!" I scream.
You're crazy,
Peter says, pulling me back in by the hem of my shirt. He's looking at me like he did that day I kissed him in the hallway. Like I'm different than he thought. We pull up to the house, and there are already a few cars parked in front. I'm craning my head, trying to get a good look. I was expecting a mansion with a wrought iron gate and maybe a gargoyle or two, but this just looks like a normal house. I must look disappointed, because as he puts the car in park, Peter says to me,
"Don't judge an estate sale by the house. I've seen all kinds of treasures at regular houses and junk at fancy houses."
I hop out and bend down to tie my shoelace.
"Hurry up, Lara Jean. The Epsteins will be here any second."
Peter grabs my hand and we run up the driveway. I'm breathing hard, trying to keep up with him. His legs are so much longer than mine. As soon as we are inside, Peter goes right up to a man in a suit, and I bend over and try to catch my breath. A few people are milling around looking at furniture. There's a long dining room table in the center of the room with china and milk glass and porcelain knickknacks. I go up to it and take a closer look. I like a little white creamer with pink rosebuds, but I'm not sure if I'm allowed to touch it and see how much it costs. It could be really expensive. There's a big basket with olden day Christmas memorabilia in it, plastic Santas and Rudolphs, and glass ornaments. I'm sifting through it when Peter comes up to me, a huge grin on his face.
"Mission accomplished," he says.
He nods at an older couple who are looking at a wooden sideboard.
"The Epsteins," he whispers to me. "Did you get the chairs?"
Mr. Epstein calls out. He's trying to sound casual and not annoyed, but his hands are on his hips and he's standing very rigidly.
"You know it," Peter calls back. "Better luck next time."
To me, he says, "Do you see anything cool?"
"Lots of stuff."
I hold up a hot pink reindeer. It's glass with an electric blue nose. This would look great on my vanity. Will you ask the man how much it costs?
"No, but you can. It'll be good for you to learn how to negotiate."
Peter grabs my hand and leads me over to the man in the suit. He's filling out some paperwork on a clipboard. He looks very busy and important. I'm not even sure if I'm supposed to be here. I'm thinking, I don't really need this reindeer. But Peter's looking at me expectantly, so I clear my throat and say, "Excuse me, sir, how much is this reindeer?"
"Oh, that's part of the lot," he says.
"Oh, I'm sorry, but what's the lot?"
"It means it's part of a set," he explains. "You have to buy the whole set of ornaments. $75. They're vintage, you see."
I start to back away. "Thank you anyway," I say. Peter pulls me back and gives me a winning smile and says,
"Can't you just throw it in with the chairs? A gift with purchase?"
The man sighs. "I don't want to separate them." He turns away to flip through his clipboard. Peter throws me a look like, "You're the one who wants the reindeer. You should step up." I give him back a look that says, "I don't want it that bad." And Peter shakes his head firmly and pushes me toward the man. I say, "Please, sir, I'll give you $10 for it. No one will know they're missing a reindeer. And look, his paw's a little chipped on the bottom, see?" I hold it up.
All right, just take it," the man says begrudgingly,
and I beam at him and start to pull my wallet out of my purse, but he waves me off.
"Thank you! Thank you so much!"
I clutch the reindeer to my chest. Maybe haggling isn't as hard as I thought. Peter winks at me, and then he says to the man,
"I'll bring my van closer so we can load up the chairs."
They go out back, and I hang around, looking at the framed pictures on the wall. I wonder if they're for sale, too. Some of them look really old. Black and white pictures of men in suits and hats. There's one picture of a girl in a confirmation dress. It's white and lacy like a wedding gown. The girl isn't smiling, but she has a mischievous glint in her eye that reminds me of Kitty.
"That's my daughter, Patricia."
I turn around. It's an old man in a navy blue sweater and stiff jeans. He's leaning against the staircase watching me. He looks very frail. His skin is paper white and thin.
"She lives in Ohio. She's an accountant."
He's still gazing at me like I remind him of someone. "Your house is lovely," I say, even though it isn't. "It's old. It could use a good cleaning.
But the things inside it are lovely.
It's empty now. All my things sold up. Can't take it with you, you know.
You mean when you die? I whisper. He glares at me.
No, I mean to the nursing home.
Oops. Right, I say, and I giggle the way I do when I feel awkward.
What do you have there in your hand?
I lift it up. This. The man in the suit gave it to me. Do you want it back? I didn't pay for it. It's part of a lot. He smiles and the wrinkles in his paper skin deepen.
That was Patty's favorite.
I hold it out to him. Maybe she'd like to keep it.
No, you have it. It's yours. She couldn't even be bothered to help me move, so...
He gives a spiteful nod.
Is there anything else you want to take? I got a trunk full of her old clothes.
Yikes. Family drama. Best not to get involved in that. But vintage clothes? That's tempting. When Peter finds me, I'm sitting cross-legged on the floor in the music room, looking through an old trunk. Mr. Clark is snoozing on the couch next to me. I found a Maud mini dress the color of cotton candy pink that I'm crazy about, and a sleeveless button-down with little daisies on it that I can tie at the waist. Look, Peter, I lift up the dress. Mr. Clark said I could have it.
Who's Mr. Clark?
Peter says, and his voice fills the room. I point at him and put my finger to my lips.
Well, we better get out of here fast before the guy in charge of the sale sees him giving stuff away for free.
I get up in a hurry. Bye, Mr. Clark, I say, not too loud. Probably better to let him sleep. He was very down earlier when he was telling me about his divorce. Mr. Clark's eyes flutter open.
Is this your feller?
No, not really, I say. And Peter throws his arm around my shoulder and says,
Yes, sir, I'm her feller.
I don't like the way he says it, like he's making fun of both me and Mr. Clark. Thank you for the clothes, Mr. Clark, I say, and he sits up straight and reaches for my hand. I give it to him and he kisses it, and his lips feel like dry moth's wings.
You're welcome, Patty.
I give him a goodbye wave and grab my new things. As we walk out the front door, Peter says,
Who's Patty?
And I pretend I don't hear. I must fall asleep in about 2 seconds from the excitement of the day, because the next thing I know, we're parked in my driveway, and Peter's shaking my shoulder saying,
We're here, Lara Jean.
I open my eyes. I'm clutching my dress and shirt to my chest like a security blanket, and my reindeer is in my lap. My new treasures. I feel like I just robbed a bank and got away with it. Thanks for today, Peter.
Thanks for coming with me.
Then, abruptly, he says,
Oh, yeah, I forgot to ask you something. My mom wants you to come over to dinner tomorrow night.
My mouth drops. You told your mom about us? Peter gives me a dirty look.
Kitty knows about us. Besides, my mom and I are close. It's just her and me and my brother Owen. If you don't want to come, then don't come. But just know that my mom will think you're rude if you don't.
I'm just saying, the more people that know, the harder it is to manage. You have to keep lies restricted to as few people as possible.
How do you know so much about lying?
Oh, I used to lie all the time as a kid. I didn't think of it as lying, though. I thought of it as playing make-believe. I told Kitty she was adopted and her real family was a traveling circus. It's why she took up gymnastics. Chapter 40. I'm not sure how dressed up I should get for dinner at Peter's house. At the store, his mom seems so fancy. I just don't want to meet her and have her be thinking of all the ways that I'm lacking compared to Genevieve. I don't see why I have to meet her at all. But I do want her to like me. I go through my closet, and then Margot's closet. I finally pick a cream-colored sweater and a blouse with a Peter Pan collar with a corduroy mustard circle skirt, plus tights and flats. Then I put on some makeup, which I hardly ever wear. I put on peach blush, and I try to do some eye makeup, but I end up washing everything off and starting over again, this time with just mascara and lip gloss. I go show Kitty and she says,
Looks like a uniform.
Like in a good way?
Kitty nods. Like you work at a nice store.
Before Peter arrives at my house, I go on the computer and look up what fork to use with what, just in case.
It's strange. Sitting at Peter's kitchen table, I feel like I'm living someone else's life. It turns out Peter's mom has made pizzas, so I didn't even need to worry about forks. And their house isn't fancy on the inside. It's just normal and nice. There's a real butter churner on display in the kitchen, pictures of Peter and his brother hanging on the walls in wooden frames, and red and white gingham, everything. There are a bunch of pizza toppings on the breakfast bar. Not just pepperoni and sausage and mushroom and pepper, but also artichoke hearts and greasy Kalamata olives and fresh mozzarella and whole cloves of garlic. Peter's mom is nice. She keeps putting more salad on my plate all throughout dinner, and I keep eating it even though I'm full. Once, I catch her looking at me, and she has a soft smile on her face. When she smiles, she looks like Peter. Peter's younger brother is named Owen. He's 12. He's like a miniature Peter, but he doesn't talk as much. He doesn't have Peter's easy way. Owen grabs a slice of pizza and shoves it into his mouth even though it's too hot. He puffs out hot air and he almost spits a piece back out into his napkin, and their mom says, "Don't you dare, Owen. We have company."
"Leave me alone," Owen mumbles.
"Peter says you have two sisters," Mrs. Kavinsky says with a bright smile. She cuts a piece of lettuce into bite-sized bits. "Your mother must love having three girls." I open my mouth to answer her, but before I can, Peter does. He says, "Lara Jean's mom passed away when she was little." He says it like she should already know, and embarrassment crosses her face.
"I'm so sorry. I remember that now."
Quickly, I say, "She did love having three girls. They thought for sure my little sister Kitty was going to be a boy, and my mom said she was so used to girls she was nervous about what she was going to do with a boy. So she was really relieved when Kitty turned out to be a girl. My sister Margot and I were too. We would pray every night we'd get a sister and not a brother."
"Hey, what's wrong with boys?" Peter objects.
Mrs. Kavinsky's smiling now. She puts another piece of pizza on Owen's plate and says, "You're heathens. Wild animals. I bet Lara Jean and her sisters are angels." Peter snorts. "Well, Kitty might be part heathen, I admit, but my older sister Margot and I are pretty good." Mrs. Kavinsky takes her napkin and tries to wipe tomato sauce off Owen's face, and he swats her hand away.
"Mom!"
When she gets up to take another pizza out of the oven, Peter says to me,
"See how my mom babies him?"
"She babies you way more," Owen counters. To me, he mumbles, "Peter doesn't even know how to cook ramen." I laugh.
"Can you?" "Hell yeah. I've been cooking for myself for years," he says.
"I like to cook too," I say, taking a sip of iced tea. "We should give Peter a cooking lesson." He eyes me and then says,
"You wear more makeup than Genevieve did."
I shrink back like he slapped me. "All I'm wearing is mascara and a little lip gloss. I know for a fact that Genevieve wears bronzer and eyeshadow and concealer every day, plus mascara and eyeliner and lipstick." Swiftly, Peter says,
"Shut up, Owen."
Owen's snickering. I narrow my eyes. This kid is only a few years older than Kitty. I lean forward and wave my hand in front of my face. "This is all natural. But thank you for the compliment, Owen."
"You're welcome," he says, just like his big brother.
On the drive home, I say, "Hey, Peter."
"What?"
"Never mind."
"What?"
"Just ask." "Well, your parents are divorced, right?"
"Yep."
"So, how often do you see your dad?"
"Not often."
"Oh, okay, I was just wondering." Peter looks over at me with expectant eyes.
"What?"
I say.
"I'm just waiting for the next question. You never just have one question."
"Well, do you miss him?"
"Who?"
"Your dad."
"Oh, I don't know. I think it's more that I miss how it used to be with us. Him and my mom and me and Owen. We were like a team. He used to come to every lacrosse game.
Peter gets